Welcome back to Hour 2 here in the darkness on the edge of town. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me for the ride every week, Mr. Tim Dennis. We're here every Saturday and Sunday night from 9 p.m. to midnight talking about news of the weird and unusual, ghosts, UFOs, Bigfoot, the Bermuda Triangle, and beyond. Thank you for joining us. And remember, if you can't listen to an entire show, we do archive the shows right on our site. Go to the podcast section and you can pick up any one of the past episodes of Darkness Radio. You can listen to them there. Do have a couple of quick announcements I want to make. Make sure to check out our website at darknessevents.com. Again, that's darknessevents.com. We have three events that are currently up and available, things you are not going to want to miss. First off, we have an amazing Halloween ball that we're going to be throwing out at the Haunted Palmer House Hotel here in Sauk Center, Minnesota. Got a lot of great opportunity for you to come out, have fun, party with us, come in your best costumes, get a chance to win, and you get some drinks, you get to have some snacks, and about 30 people get to go ghost hunt with Dave, Tim, and the rest of the crew from Darkness Radio as we ghost hunt from about 1:30 in the morning till 4 or 5 in the morning, ghost hunting the Palmer House Hotel. So I hope you'll join us. Get more information at darknessevents.com. We also have a great event coming up in November with the cast of the brand new paranormal show that starts October 17th, Ghost Adventures, where we have Zach, Nick, and Aaron are going to join us as we go to Rolling Hills Sanitarium out in East Bethany, New York, right outside of Buffalo. It's an amazing place. This will be our third trip there. It does not let you down. It is one of the most freaky places, full on shadow apparitions, amazing EVP. We're going to be joined by EVP experts, Mark and Debbie Constantino. We've got Stacy Jones, the ghost cop. Tim and I are going to be out there along with all of the rest of the speakers, and Archbishop James Long, the demonologist and exorcist, will be on hand as well. So I hope you'll check that out. And finally, we have an amazing event coming up in May 2009. Come back with us to Haunted Waverly Hills Sanitarium, one of the truly most haunted places in the United States. The reports and the just unbelievable activity that we've had there, it'll just knock your socks off. Some of the stuff that we just had at this last one, our good friends Mike and Marley Gibson caught some of the most dramatic ghost video I've ever seen. Just a really, truly cool looking thing. And that'll be coming up in May of 2009. We are going to try to have some of that footage up eventually on our website, but right now they are under contract, so we can't show it. La-ti-da. How about that, Tim? Our friends are so fancy.
I guess.
Remember when we used to count?
I got something I can show them that's under contract.
Wow, come on, keep this clean. It's a family show. Hey, we're going to go to our next guest for the evening, but again, remember, go check out our website at darknessevents.com. I wanted, you know, Tim, I was looking for something a little bit unique and different. And, you know, all the other shows, they cover conspiracy theories and a lot of the strange stuff. And I came across this author. And first of all, I was intrigued because his first book is something I loved. When I was a teenager, man, I was a huge Beatles fan.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that always intrigued me was the whole Paul McCartney is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Little conflict that was going on for a long time and conspiracy. And our next guest actually wrote an entire book about it and has collected some of the most compelling evidence. And I want to have him on the show here to talk about that. But also, he's written a book called Take a Walk on the Dark Side, Rock and Roll's Myths, Legends, and Curses. So please welcome, for his first time and hopefully not his last, author R. Gary Patterson. Good evening, sir.
Hello?
Yeah, sorry about that.
I'm sorry. All of a sudden there was silence on
yes.
the other end. Yeah.
Thanks a lot for coming in. Now, you know, I want to start off on this. I know we want to talk about some of the more macabre and strange stories, but I want to talk about your book, The Walrus Was Paul, for a few minutes.
Okay.
Because this book truly intrigues me. This was something that I was excited to get a copy of to start going through. Now, let me ask your belief. Now, do you believe that this is nothing more than just a fun little marketing ploy that was made up by the Beatles? Do you think that they were unwitting participants in this and had no clue what was going on? Or do you think Paul McCartney's dead and we've got a doppelganger lookalike taking his spot?
Oh, wow. I think that if I went back to 1969 and had found the stuff that I had in a book, I'd probably think Paul was dead. But, you know, basically when I wrote the book, it was originally the idea was that I at first thought it was a lot of fans with just really overactive imagination making everything fit. So when I wrote it, I had sort of a section on clues in which it was, you know, just a totally ridiculous, or number two, guided looking, guided listening, and which you try to make things fit, you know, and there's some sort of sense of thing that it goes in like that. But what really intrigued me was category three, and that would be clues that were actually planted by the Beatles. And I really do believe the Beatles did plant a few of the clues for whatever reason we may never know. But I think that there was there was an attempt for them to make us think that Paul was dead. I really do.
Well, let's go back to 1969. Can you give us a clue? Start up with the story on this. How did this great Beatle debate kind of start up? And you know, I was surprised reading the book to go that you were able to track back some of the quote-unquote clues all the way back to Yesterday and Today and Rubber Soul album.
Yeah, well, I mean, that a lot of the clues went even further back than that. But what you got to remember is that when the clues actually hit in 69, everybody went back because Abbey Road was the album cover with the famous procession across the street. And then everybody started to re-examine the White Album, and they examined Magical Mystery Tour and then Sgt. Pepper. So now we're back to 67. And it just seemed like a natural progression to go further back. And McCartney was always different in a lot of the photographs. He always had his back turned or profile. And people started taking that and they said, oh, look at the Help album. McCartney's the only one without a hat. So then it started to get really ridiculous as
right.
he was going back. But if we go back to 69, first of all, we'll have to set it up. If you remember, the Beatles did not perform live after 1966.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how much money was offered, they didn't perform live unless you count the rooftop, you know, at Apple.
Right,
and,
for the Let It Be.
The Let It Be, but, you know, not any live performances. And basically, you know, there was a lot of problems in their last tour. You know, this was after John had made the statement that Beatles were more popular than Jesus Christ, and someone threw firecrackers at them in Memphis. And there was, they thought it was guns, and Lennon was, they told him that someone was going to shoot him at 9 o'clock at night, and that sort of terrified him because John had a major belief in the number 9 in numerology. So, and then when they had all their money and the problems taken away in the Philippines for the Marcus family, George turned to the other Beatles and said, you know, it's not fun being a Beatle anymore. So they decided to go in the studio and change music as we know it. And that was another clue because this wasn't the Beatles after Revolver. When Sgt. Pepper's came out, the Beatles had mustaches, facial hair, orchestration. This wasn't I Want to Hold Your Hand, the Beatles. The music
right.
had changed, they'd changed, and everybody wanted to know, why weren't the Beatles playing live, and why has the music changed, and something's got to be wrong. And then the rumor came out that McCartney had been killed in a car crash.
Now, what year were they saying that he supposedly died? Were they saying he died in 69, or was it 66?
66. 66 was the rumor. And so the thing really hit the airways with Russ Gibb. And a caller on a Sunday afternoon, whose name was Tom, called Russ, and he says, I want to rap with you about McCartney being dead and all that. And, of course, Gibb hadn't heard anything about it. He said, what do you mean about McCartney being dead? So he said, well, play Strawberry Fields Forever backwards. I mean, not backwards, but just play and listen to the end of it, and you'll hear John say, I buried Paul. So they started playing records on the air. The next thing you know, teenagers were coming down with their records to the studio, and they were playing all these songs. And then someone said, yeah, but play them backwards. Play Revolution Number 9 backwards. And then they could hear a car crash and a voice call, you know, yelling, get me out, let me out. And so the next thing you know, you had a wave of hysteria. And then it was picked up by Robey Young in New York and, what was it, WABC, which I think reached about every state, you know, from the East Coast to the Mississippi. And Robey Young said that he was let go because the program director told him that he was creating a national panic and stopped playing these records and stopped talking about McCartney being dead. So it went everywhere. But it wasn't as big in England as it was here. And when the Beatles were told that there was a DJ in the United States who was saying Paul was dead and asked McCartney, what do we do? McCartney's answer was, well, sounds like good publicity to me. Tell him I'm not. But they didn't tell him until after November. So this went on for weeks, and, you know, it was captivating. Now, there was no internet. It was all done by radio. And it was sort of like, you know, it was like everybody had a little piece of the clue, and there was almost a feeling of power that you knew something. And you got that, you know, that strange feeling sitting in your dorm room or in your bedroom with your turntable trying to play it backwards and get those creepy feelings because no one had ever done that before. And, you know, I know a lot of your listeners are younger, and they probably say, well, you know, that's probably totally ridiculous. But you got to remember, you know, the 60s, bad things happened. I mean, John Kennedy was assassinated in 63 and 68, Martin Luther King Jr., Bobby Kennedy. It was all believable. I mean, there could have been some form of government conspiracy that felt that the Beatles and the counterculture was taking its toll. I mean, look at 1967. At Monterey, how many new artists died within 3 years who started at Monterey? I mean, you had Otis Redding, you had Janis Joplin, you know, those two. that just come to the top of my mind. I know that Mama Cass Elliott also was one of the originators who had a lot of friends in the counterculture, and she died. And Brian Jones, who brought Jimi Hendrix, and Jimi Hendrix himself, you know, they both had died in 69 and 70. So, you know, even though it was a terrible coincidence, it was just the idea that the counterculture was dropping like flies, and the Beatles had, you know, actually gave the youth an idea against the Vietnam War, and it sort of challenged social mores. So, yeah, I mean, it was something that that generation thought could be very well and possible. So a lot of people started looking for clues, and it actually became a great game, I guess, to find out who knew the most about Paul being dead and what were the clues.
Now, there were also some of the clues, and there were some of the clues that supposedly led you to phone numbers. And if you called the phone numbers, was there any actual, were you able to do any backup where there was proof that people were answering the phone numbers and saying that, like, the Apple Records is evil or whatever the little thing was? And
yeah, I mean, you know, we can talk about these because I think these things are fabulous.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to go through them. We've got 2 hours to spend here together, I think this is a great conspiracy story, so I'd love to know more.
And, you know, unfortunately, when I did the book in the 90s, it was kind of hard to actually get any of the phone numbers to still work. But what I did was track down, you know, accounts of supposedly what had happened. Of course, you know, that was part of the great fun of urban legends. But,
right,
you know, one of the things you're talking about is the Magical Mystery Tour album. And the story goes that if you turn the album upside down and you connected the large stars, a phone number appeared. And if you called the number, and some people even got more specific, Wednesday at 5 o'clock in the morning, Great Britain time, that you would have, there were three answers to the call. Some groups said that they heard a voice that was a funeral home. Well, that was spooky enough. And then a second voice, other people claimed, who called the number, just heard a voice that just said, "You're getting closer." And then another voice appeared to ask the caller Beatle trivia questions with a promise to send it to the Pepperland. And, you know, I'd heard this thing about Pepperland. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but the idea was the Beatles are going to buy this island and put on this great concert. And, you know, I thought, well, you know, this is a great myth. And then Alistair Taylor, who was with Apple, I'd met him at a Beatle Fest. I think it was in New York. And he was talking about John Lennon came up to him and said, "I want you to buy an island." And I thought, well, Pepperland, you know. And so maybe there was something there. Maybe this was a great game. But, you know, that was kind of interesting. That was the phone number. And but there were supposedly clues with mirrors, and the greatest mirror clues on Sgt. Pepper's.
Well, we'll cover that when we come back. We have to take our first break of the second hour here. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show, and this evening we're going to be discussing Take a Walk on the Dark Side, rock and roll's myths, legends, and curses, and some of the weird conspiracy theories revolving around the supposed death of Paul McCartney in 1966. We'll be back with more. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio with our guest R. Gary Patterson and his books The Walrus Was Paul and Take a Walk on the Dark Side, Rock and Roll's Myths, Legends, and Curses. Now, let's go back here, Mr. Patterson, start off on the fact that, so it was supposedly, was it November 9th, 1966, Paul McCartney had left after a fight at Apple Records and was supposedly killed in a car accident and decapitated. That's the story.
Well, the story is they left Abbey Road, and that it was on November 9th, 1966, and that was the rumor. So when I started doing the book, I thought, okay, we have this date, and, you know, I didn't think very much of it, but I thought, okay, maybe that's some evidence. So I went, researched all the London newspapers for the, you know, 2 to 3 weeks before and after. Really didn't find anything on that. And then I remembered the clue about the mirror on the Magical Mystery Tour album. So I noticed that if you look at the Sgt. Pepper's cover, I suppose this is probably the greatest clue of all, and this is the one I've never seen debunked. And, you know, no matter how you feel, this is one that was really ingenious, so it really says a lot about the Beatles putting it there. But, you know, maybe I really don't understand why they haven't confessed up to it, but personally I hope they don't, because I think urban legends should live forever. But anyway, if you look at the Sgt. Pepper's cover, you'll remember that it looks like the Beatles. You see them in the wax figures from Madame Tussauds, and then you see the Beatles all dressed up in their psychedelic finery and their band outfits with all different colors. And and the word Beatles in red hyacinth flowers appear to be on top of a freshly dug grave. And then there's a crowd of people standing behind the Beatles. And Life magazine actually devoted a cover to Paul Is Still With Us. and went through the whole story. But and they had this rumor that there was an open hand over Paul's head on the cover, and it was conveniently a Far Eastern symbol of death, or a hand of benediction when a person is buried, and the priest raises his hand and makes a sign of the cross. I mean, I thought, well, you know, at worst case scenario, there's an open hand over his head and not the other Beatles. But what was interesting was that the cover was designed by Peter Blake, who was a painter of Australian fairground posters. And I thought, well, that's cool. And Peter Blake was the artist, but the Drumskin, I'm sorry, the Drumskin was the Australian painter. And his name was Joe Epgrave. And I thought, well, that's a funny name, Epgrave, E-P-T-H-G-R-A-V-E. And obviously, I mean, maybe the name is Epgrave, but it sort of reminded me of an epitaph, which would be over a grave, and you'd find an epitaph on a tombstone. And if you look at the bass drum, if it is a grave, then the bass drum has to be the tombstone. And on a tombstone, it tells you the name of the person who died and the date of death. Now, there were two drum skins designed for the Sgt. Pepper's cover. They're both completely different, except for the phrase Lonely Hearts. So, excuse me, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. This is the reason the Beatles named the album, was to give this clue. And if you look in the crowd, you see Carl Jung. Of course, Carl Jung believed in mandalas as an archetype, so the drum fits the mandala of birth, death, and rebirth. And then you have Lewis Carroll, whose famous work was Alice's Adventures Through the Looking Glass. So that was a clue for a mirror. If you lay the album cover down or the CD and take a straight-edge mirror and place it in the center of Lonely Hearts, it spells out a cryptic message as you read from left to right. Actually, the L becomes Roman numeral 1, and then O-N-E, which is 1 again, and then you have I-X, which is numeral 9, and you have 119. And then it says, he die. And between he and die is a diamond-shaped arrow that points straight up to Paul McCartney and down to the grave. And when I first found it, I thought, well, maybe it's one of the Beatles, the one with 9 letters, because McCartney had 9 letters, he dies. But what you got to remember is that on a tombstone, it has to be a date. So if you take the two ones together, it's 11-9, which would be November the 9th. Now, the first thing that I thought about would be that in Great Britain, it would be opposite. It would be September 11th, which is sort of another little chilling fact, you know, with our right. September 11th.
Right.
There was no record of anything happening on September 11th. It was the Beatles were on holiday. But in two Beatles sources, there's a mention of a car accident that Paul McCartney may have had on November 9th, 1966, at 5 o'clock in the morning. So you get your calendar and you go back to 1966, and November 9th was a Wednesday. Now, when you turn the album cover over, the album cover appropriately is blood red on the back.
Right.
It was the first time in history that Beatle lyrics, or any lyric of any song, was printed on an album jacket. And if you look at the Beatles, Paul has his back to the camera, and the other Beatles are looking straight forward, which means he's different. The rumor at that time was that the imposter had plastic surgery and the scars hadn't healed, because I mean, I love the way the conspiracy story fit. But George Harrison is pointing with his thumb, and that's what's interesting, because the picture was made and then the lyrics are superimposed on top of the picture, and what George is pointing to is the first line of the song She's Leaving Home, and the first line says Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock as the day begins, which was the exact hour and day of November 9th, 1966, that this was supposed to have happened. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. And on the front cover, there's a doll sitting in a stuffed figure's lap, and the doll has a toy white Aston Martin model car on her leg, which was the car McCartney was driving in 66. And then the figure she's sitting in the lap, the figure has what appears to be a blood-stained driving glove on its left hand. So someone went to a lot of incredible trouble to hide something on that album cover. And whoever did the bass drum, I mean, it was brilliant. Now, when I researched it, I'd heard that it was Mal Evans, one of the Beatles roadies, who came up with the phrase Lonely Hearts. And if that was the case, then, you know, of course, Mal has now passed away for many years. But still, the story is what a great hidden clue with a mirror on a drum skin. I don't know if anybody else could have pulled it off, but to me, that's the smoking gun of the whole thing.
Well, I thought I remembered in the book Shout, too, that came out in, I think it was early 80s. I thought there was a recollection of a nurse who supposedly called into a radio station on on November 9th that morning saying that somebody had just been brought in a car accident, and they thought that it was Paul McCartney and that the patient had died.
Well, that's one thing that went through, and also this is how I think the whole thing began. It was in January of 66, and a rumor had gone around that Paul McCartney had been killed on the M1 motorway outside London in on the icy road conditions. So callers and newspapers were frankly calling Abbey Road and Apple trying to find out if this was true. They eventually found McCartney, who was at his St. John's Wood home, and when they got in touch with him, Paul said, no, I'm fine. I'm not left the house. Everything's fine. Don't worry. But, you know, I was sort of wondering, if he'd heard all that attention, why not say, hey, let's have some fun. Let's put some clues here. Because I know that John Lennon really had a good time putting lyrics in, well, I Am the Walrus, because everybody tried to analyze everything they did. So he said, let's see him figure this one out. That's when he did the Walrus. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing is, if it was a great hoax, then what they benefited is they sold a heck of a lot of albums in 1969. But the funny part was that nobody caught it. I mean, not in 67 and 68. And when the Abbey Road album came out, that's when everything started to come about. But it's almost like they got impatient, because on the White album you had Glass Onion, where John Lennon sings, I told you about the walrus and me, man. You know that we're as close as can be, man. Then he says, here's another clue for you all. The walrus was Paul. Now, he could have said, like Lennon in the Playboy interviews, the Fox Terrier was Paul, whatever. But it brings back that mystical black walrus symbol from Magical Mystery Tour, who is supposed to be a harbinger of death. So the idea of the walrus being Paul and mentioning another clue, which means that there were clues before. And so when they finally hit in 1969, you know, that's the thing. Maybe they started throwing it out. Nobody caught it. So they gave a few extra clues, but then also what's interesting is while they shut up about it, and that's also having to do with August of 1969 with the Manson murders in California, where Helter Skelter and other Beatle lyrics were written in blood on the wall of Sharon Tate's home that she was renting. And, you know, that was a whole terrible story in which Charles Manson also heard hidden messages in Beatles songs.
When we come back, I want to discuss real quickly a little bit about, well, who was it that supposedly replaced Paul McCartney? We have to take our second break here. Everybody stay tuned. We're going to be delving more into the weird and world, the crazy world of rock and roll and all the myths and legends that surround it, and a little bit more with the crazy conspiracies of Paul McCartney's supposed death. Stay tuned and listen to more. Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. This week we're going out there a little bit and talking about a totally different side of the paranormal, talking about the conspiracies and the strange and untimely deaths of a lot of different rock and rollers. We'll be getting more into that. Right now, though, we're talking about a fascinating book called The Walrus Was Paul, The Great Beatle Death Clues. And our guest is R. Gary Patterson. The book is available online. We have a link for it at our site. Go to darknessradio.com. Click on the upcoming shows. You'll see the covers of the books. You can click them. They'll take you right over to Amazon so you can order your copies. Let me ask you, Mr. Patterson, again, doing the research on this book and the things that are going on. Now, I recall hearing when I was a teenager one of the cool stories that I had handed down to me from somebody that I'd gotten in touch with back from the 60s had told me that one of the thoughts was that there was an Ottawa police man who had a striking resemblance to Paul McCartney and had won a contest back in the 60s. And suddenly, and he was also attached to a very prominent, wealthy family, much like the Eastman family, that and suddenly Paul McCartney broke up with his longtime girlfriend, Jane Asher, and started dating Linda Eastman. And this new character kind of filled in for him and took over. And on the Sgt. Pepper's album cover, in the one scene, he's got the OPD, which is the Ottawa Police Department badge on his shoulder. Now, had you heard that, or do you have any relevance to that at all?
Well, actually, there are two names. The name you're talking about, supposedly in Canada, the imposter's name was William Campbell. Okay, mm-hmm. And the OPD badge on the Sergeant Pepper cover. Of course, the British jargon for someone who's killed in a car accident and taken to the hospital is officially pronounced dead, so it's OPD. But mm-hmm. If you really look at the patch, it's OPP, and it stands for Ontario Provincial Police.
That's not what it stands for nowadays, buddy. You down with OPP, Tim?
Yeah, you know me.
I know what you say.
I got it. But what was funny was the thing is that when McCartney came out in Life magazine and they asked him, he said, well, perhaps it stood for the Ontario Police Department, which still meant OPD, which was all, you know, I thought, well, surely you know it's OPP, you know. But anyway, that was just, that was one thing. Another name was, let's see, Billy Shears. From Chelsea in England. There was a magazine even traced down the part of London. And then, of course, that clue goes in with Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, where the line is, I don't really want to stop the show, but I think you might like to know the singer's going to sing a song. He wants you all to sing along. So let me introduce to you the one and only Billy Shears. And what did he sing? If I sing out of tune, would you stand up and walk out on me? Which was the idea that if they brought in an imposter because Paul was the cute Beatle, the most popular Beatle, then if he were gone and they brought in anyone else, would that person actually, you know, create the excitement the Beatles did with McCartney? So that was the rumor with it. Now, what's really interesting, there was a Beatle, a Paul McCartney lookalike contest, and it was won by a Canadian singer whose name was Keith. Remember 98.6, or is that too far back? But he did resemble Paul McCartney. But, okay. You know, the idea that, yes, there were Paul McCartney lookalike contests, whatever, but there was never been any claim to William Campbell or to Billy Shears, whose father's name was supposedly Philip Shears. I mean, it gets so in, you know, just really interesting, all the rumor that spread around with it. But if you want to hear a real strange story, before Robbie Young died, he was with a friend of his at the Village Voice who covered McCartney's engagement party in London. And he went over for Jane Asher and Paul's event. And he noticed that Paul was spending a heck of a lot more time with his photographer, Linda Eastman, than he was with Jane. So he goes over to one of the people at Apple and he says, you know, this looks kind of odd. Why has Paul spent all the time with this female photographer, not with Jane Asher? And he said, the guy looked at him and he said, well, that's really not Paul. That's his double. And that's what Robbie Young always swore to. So, you know, the idea is that Apple could have had this thing set up. I mean, this was something that was just, you know, it sold tons of albums. And one thing that when you start researching a lot of rock bands, in 1967, Jim Morrison suggested to the Doors that they spread a rumor that he was dead so they could sell more albums. So, you know, it's kind of funny. It all fits in with that. But what happened in 69, Abbey Road really wasn't doing that well, you know, when it first came out. But when the rumors came out, everybody was buying the albums, playing them backwards, and then they bought the whole catalog. All these Beatle albums are jumping on Billboard. And Russ Gibbs said, at first, Apple was real angry with him. But then when the sales started coming through, this is funny. They sent him a gift, and they sent him his own collection of Beatle albums. You know, instead of giving money, they sent him a vinyl copy of all the albums. You know, thanking him for, you know, the attention that was turned on to the Beatles that made them sell so many albums. So I thought that was pretty funny.
Now, was there any follow up on these two gentlemen? Did either one of them ever go missing? That supposedly were these lookalikes?
Oh, you talk about William Campbell. There's not even any information that he actually existed. Keith never went missing. He had a song called 98.6. I think he was a one-hit wonder. And actually, I have to date myself on this because I saw him perform with some of these other super bands of the 60s, like the Royal Guardsmen, who did Snoopy versus the Royal Guard.
The Red Baron, right?
And what was it? Oh, Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs and Tommy James of the Shondells. So it was the best of bubblegum pop for the 60s. But, of course, my first concert was the Rolling Stones, so that went so bad with Brian Jones and everybody. But my second one was that. So I remember seeing Keith, and come to think of it, I don't think he resembled Paul McCartney that much.
With all the hubbub of this then and all the stories going on, which is kind of interesting, too, that the stories continued through all of their album covers. You're able to track them pretty much all the way through. And Abbey Road, of course. Yeah, the two I was really most learned on were the Sgt. Pepper and the Abbey Road album, which, you know, had a bunch. But see, there was some of the stuff like the skull on the back I never saw, again, matrixing of light, and the three on the board I never saw, you know, the crack in the Beatles. I don't know. It just seemed silly to me, a lot of that stuff. I thought the more interesting deal on the front was the whole look of you know, John Lennon dressed in white, almost like a, to me, it always looked like he was the priest. You had the, mm-hmm. the pallbearer or the gravedigger next. Then you had Paul McCartney walking out of step barefoot, like a, like mm-hmm. most people are buried without their or shoes on. Mm-hmm. And then you had Ringo kind of, you know, following up the end. So that, to me, always looked a lot weirder than the rest of the stuff, I thought, which was kind of convoluted. But then it started going back and forth in the lyrics of the songs mm-hmm. That led all the way through it. What do you think were some of the more compelling, weird lyric tips and clues that they gave out?
Well, you know, I think some of the things that were a lot of fun were probably the backward tracks because, you know, a lot of people ask me, are there backward tracks and records? And they expect me to say no, I think. But, yes, there are backward tracks, but the subliminal messages that a lot of people got into in the 80s, which are phonetic reversals, are completely different. Because the very first song that had a backward track was Rain by the Beatles, and somehow the tape was twisted over, and John went home to listen to it, and he heard the voice that was backwards, and he told George Martin, he said, put this on the song. So on the third verse you hear, it sounds like John is chanting. Maybe something in Hare Krishna or whatever, but when you play it backwards, all he says is when the rain comes, they run and hide their heads. So on the White Album with Revolution Number 9, where they cut slips of tape and spliced them together and held pencils on capstans on the tape decks and slowing the tape down, speeding it up and flipping it backwards, and you hear a voice that sounds like John Lennon say, so all right, Paul, then we better go and see a surgeon. Then you hear the car crash, and then you hear the voice screaming, let me out, and flames burning inside the car. And then Number 9 turns into Turn Me On, Dead Man. I mean, that's pretty spooky, but sometimes when you listen to that, you sort of wonder, well, is this someone heard, and now I hear it because it's just, you know, my desire to hear it. But I think that's pretty odd. Also, right before Blackbird on the White Album, there's some muttering, and when I researched it, Abbey Road said that John was saying, Monsieur, Monsieur, how about another one? But actually, when you listen to it, it sounds exactly like Paul is dead now. Miss him, miss him, miss him. And someone had some fun putting some lyrics in. And the clue, the walrus was Paul. That's another one. At the end of I Am the Walrus, there's some lines that John supposedly just turned on the radio and got some Shakespearean actors doing a scene from King Lear. But you can hear a voice that says, bury my body. Then the next voice goes, oh, untimely death.
Right.
And then at the end it says, what, is he dead? And it just seems like it's real convenient that it ends with that. So you have some of that that's kind of interesting.
Well, did it seem strange to you, too, as you're researching this, that there seemed to be this great friendship between Paul McCartney and John Lennon that all of a sudden just went south? And I know a lot of people wanted to blame Yoko, but there was like an overnight change between the band and the two main characters of McCartney and Lennon. You know, do you think that's what really helped to perpetuate the mythos of this, is that it just really seemed to be no longer the two kids we grew up with?
Well, I think that, you know, sometimes what we do is we like to keep things the way they are, and, you know, selfishly within ourselves. And I think that in the beginning, when John was with Cynthia, and I don't think Cynthia was, you know, Cynthia, I've known Cynthia for a while, and she's very sweet person, and she's, you know, just excellent person to be with. I mean, I think the world of her. But I mean, as far as a creative equal to John Lennon, you know, that's Yoko Ono, very avant-garde. And when he met Yoko and she came into his life, there was very little time for him to be with Paul. If you remember in the movie Let It Be, George Harrison's working on I Me Mine, and instead of helping him, you know, John's waltzing with Yoko in the studio. So he just put all his time into Yoko, and he felt like Paul didn't understand that, you know, they had grown up and grown apart. So I think that's one of the sad things. And I think that one of the things about a lot of people who blame Yoko is that if it wasn't for Yoko, I don't think there would have been a White Album. I don't think there would have been an Abbey Road. Because John was ready to leave the Beatles, and he was furious with McCartney when McCartney came out with a solo album and announced that he had left the Beatles. So there was a lot of tension building there, and I think it's, you know, from great creative people. And here's another thing, too, when we talk about Paul being dead. You know, if Paul had died in 1966, you know, what were his greatest songs to 1966? I mean, Yesterday, okay? And, you know, Eleanor Rigby. Those are great, but think of the songs that McCartney wrote after 1967. You know, I mean, not the whole second side of Abbey Road, Live and Let Die. I mean, the guy who took his place, if he looked like him, he had to be a heck of a talent, didn't he?
Although you got to give him this, that if anybody was going to try to make a show for Paul McCartney being dead, it would have to be after he left the Beatles, because then you get stuck with songs like Silly Love Songs and
yeah, I think if you play
Happy Christmas.
Like an icon backwards, it actually says, I really wish I was dead.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to take a quick break. We have a caller online we'll come back to with a question for you, and we'll talk more about the weirdness that is rock and roll. Hey, welcome back to the show. You're listening to Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We're here with you every Saturday and Sunday night from 9 p.m. to midnight. You're going to want to stay tuned. We're going to be back after the top of the hour in the 11 o'clock time. So we're going to be talking more. We're going to get into his next book, Take a Walk on the Dark Side, Rock and Roll's Myths, Legends, and Curses. Talk about some of the weirdness. But right now we're talking to author R. Gary Patterson about his book, The Walrus Was Paul, The Great Beetle Death Clues. Going into more of a weird conspiracy theory thing here, Mr. Patterson, let's wrap up. We've got about, I don't know, about 10 minutes left in this segment, and I'd like to just know, what is your thoughts with all these amazing amount of clues? Did you think that they thought, well, you know, eventually this thing is going to start to run out of steam, so we'll put all the stuff into effect, so later on, you know, because you know what it totally reminds me of is that Three Men and a Baby movie,
right,
that came out, and amazingly, just as it came out on video, they happened to notice the ghost of this little boy in the window, and suddenly videotapes started selling and being rented like mad just in time for this movie to break, and it became like one of the best-selling movies of that year.
Oh, and, it did.
Yeah.
I agree that all the Beatle albums started selling greatly after that, and you know, they probably still do. After we do a show like this, you'll probably have a lot of people want to go out and buy the albums and look and listen again, because I mean, it's a great experience. It's a lot of fun, and especially if you have a bunch of kids, like in high school, when they get into it,
right, which is what I was, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, even today it's amazing how many young kids are into this and the Paul is Dead thing, and every now and then there's rumors. I know that I was doing another radio show, and I had to there was a site that had photographs of Paul McCartney that were shot from 66 in the early 60s, and then those features were placed on McCartney after 67, and the features didn't match.
Right.
So the idea was, oh my gosh, you know, look, here it is. But then I had to go into actually the TBI, Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, FBI, and talking to people about photographs, and then, you know, there were certain things about how the photos were stretched in the album covers, and how a lot of these were basically not placed together scientifically. And so it was all just
well, that and the fact that we know as we get older, our noses and our ears continue to grow.
They do. And
so things are going to shift.
Like McCartney being taller, but it was in the same day they have a picture where you didn't see if Jane Asher had her shoes or she was kneeling. And I mean, it was pretty bad. But the worst part was that they were saying, well, you look how the faces meet with Tara Brown, who was the guy who was killed in the car crash in Day in the Life. You know, maybe Tara Brown was Paul McCartney, or, oh my gosh, Doris Day doesn't match. Look at her face. And I was thinking, you know, it was better if it was, you know, not inclusive. I mean, it has to be something that was only once like that. So that became sort of a little buzz, I guess, about 5 years ago. I remember that.
Well, now I'm curious too with the weirdness. It actually went over in the albums after the Beatles broke up. John Lennon and Paul McCartney, I don't know if a lot of people know this, had this little verbal assault going on their albums.
Oh yeah.
Where they would write a song in response to each other's songs. And I know in one of the songs, John Lennon says something about they were right when they said you were dead.
Yeah, that was how can you sleep? And it says those freaks was right when they said you were dead. But Ringo had one too. And the story goes that the other three Beatles resented McCartney because McCartney went with Eastman, and you know, on the business end, and that was one of the reasons they fell out. But they had a code name for McCartney that was Boogaloo, and there's a song called Back Off Boogaloo, and there's a line where Ringo says, wake up, meathead, don't forget that you were dead. And so, yeah, they continue with that, but here's the fun part. I think it was in 97, maybe 96, the Simpsons show had an episode where Lisa wanted to become a vegetarian, so on the show she meets Paul and Linda.
Right.
And Paul's telling her, you know, he says, you know, if you play Maybe I'm Amazed backwards, there's a ripping recipe for lentil soup. So when the show ends, sure enough, it ends with "Maybe I'm amazed." But on this version, you can hear a voice go, bleep, 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 bleep. I said, oh, my gosh, it's a backward track. So when you reverse it, you hear Paul McCartney say, take one cup of pepper, add one teaspoon. He goes nice. Through a whole recipe for lentil soup. And then at the end, he says, oh, by the way, I'm alive at the end of it. And all that right. was in 97.
Very cool. Well, did they ever come out? I mean, and agree to it. Yeah, we threw some of these on just to screw with you guys. I mean, did they ever address that, or did they just, I don't know, you guys are crazy.
Well, it seems like we have this great revisionist history, because in 69, when Life magazine came out with the clues, Paul said, that was John in black on the Magical Mystery Tour album. He was the walrus suit. And then in 1980, in an interview in Chicago, I've got a clip from Paul McCartney saying, well, we were filming the Magical Mystery Tour, and I just picked up this walrus head and put it on. So, yeah, I was the walrus. Well, how can it change from 69 to 80? You know, who was in the black walrus outfit? I thought that was funny.
Well, didn't they all think it was John anyway, because the walrus has got little glasses on the end of his
yeah,
nose?
That's what you'd think.
Right.
And the other thing is that as this was going on, I have a friend who's with ABC Radio. And when the anthologies came out on ABC, he got an interview with McCartney, and he's a good friend of mine. We did a lot of radio, and he, major Beatle fan. So he interviewed McCartney, and he asked him, he said, you know, On Free as a Bird, when they put it out, there's over 90 hidden Beatle references in the video. You knew that, right?
I did not.
Okay. For your listeners, if they're really, really strong in their Beatle lore, take the video, Free as a Bird, and watch, and there's references to Beatles songs all in there. I mean, it's amazing what they do. And
everybody's checking out YouTube right now, I bet.
That's it. Well, that's fun. I mean, right. this is what makes this, you know, just fascinating. So McCartney, in the interview, when he asked him that, he said, well, he said, it became a bit of a game in the old Beatle days to put little hidden things in. And that's what McCartney said. And so as soon as this was over, my friend calls me and he says, listen to this. And he plays the tape. He says, the first time he ever said the Beatles put anything in hidden. And so maybe that was something, but a bit of a game in the old Beatle days. Well, it was a heck of a game. And, you know, I'd like to know how many clues I missed. That's the fun part.
Well, again, the name of the book is The Walrus Was Paul, The Great Beatle Death Clues. It's written by R. Gary Patterson. You can get the book at Amazon.com. There's links for it right on our website, so check it out. And it's a fascinating book. We only scratched the surface, people. I'm telling you, this book is a fascinating read. I handed it, when I got the copies the other day, I handed this book to my daughter, who's 12 years old and a voracious reader, and she loves the monkeys. And I said, honey, if you love the monkeys, this is a really cool deal Dad was into at your age about the Beatles. And I said, why don't you read this? And I'll tell you, she read this book in a day and a half.
Oh, that's great.
And loved it. And she's, you know, she's 13 years old, so, you know, out of her element with who this all is. But she said, Dad, this is fascinating. She goes, this is just a great read. It's like a murder mystery.
And it is. And, I mean, I think that's what's fun. I think that's why the story lives forever, because a new generation is going to come up. They're going to hear the urban legend. It's going to keep going.
That's right. When we come back, we're going to be talking about your other book, Take a Walk on the Dark Side, Rock and Roll Myths, Legends, and Curses. And one of the things I want to point out about one of the clues from the McCartney death that's on the Abbey Road album cover, and something that you kind of cover in this book as well. We're going to come back with more, so stay tuned. We've got a lot of crazy stuff to talk about. Rock and Roll's Myths, Legends, and Curses with author R. Gary Patterson. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show right here on 100.3 FM, K-Talk.